But this is, so I was saying, this is from a customer perspective on implementing Project Server out of the box. If that wasn't what you were looking for, you know, won't hurt my feelings if you want to give somebody your seat, so. Okay. How many of you already have Project installed? Oh, a bunch of people. So you don't need this. You've done it, right? It all works good. You're all good? Okay. Well, we're going to talk about what we did at Newport News Shipbuilding. First, we'll introduce ourselves, and then I'm going to tell you about the organization, sort of give you a setting for what we were up against in implementing. And we'll talk about our business requirements, about our solution approach, the deployment approach. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on reporting. Lessons learned, what are we going to do next, and hopefully have some time at the end for Q&A. Let you know, if you haven't heard this already, I know we're kind of in the home stretch here, but all the slides are going to be available in my PC after the conference, so you don't have to, you know, write down everything on the slides or take pictures. And if we run long, I'll be available afterwards to talk to anybody who wants to talk about things or have specific questions. So I've been with the shipyard for about 5 years this time around. I actually started my career there many, many, many years ago. Left, went and worked in healthcare industry as a defense contractor with the Army and the Air Force. I worked for a .com that burst, and I worked for a .com that was very successful and was sold. Worked for Ferguson, for the Brits in the audience, it's Wolseley, they sell toilets. So so I've been kind of all through the gamut, but the shipyard is my home, so I'm glad to be home working there. Rob?
And I'm Rob Hirschman, I'm just here for color commentary.
Yeah, and I'm glad I have somebody for jokes because not my forte. So this is our official Newport News shipbuilding slide on who we are, what we do. So as you can see, we build ships. We build big ships. We're focused on people who cut steel and pull cable and do the things you do to build ships, lift really heavy things. And we've been around for 128 years. So as you might understand, we're a little bit set in our ways, kind of been doing things the same way for a long time. We've got 450 people in our IT organization, which, by the way, you don't see IT on that list, do you? Because we're just the people in the background. We're supporting those shipbuilders, and we're making them successful. So we got those 450 people managing the projects that support about 20,000 shipbuilders. And of those 20,000 shipbuilders, there's 1,000 of them, a little over 1,000, who are called master shipbuilders. Those are people that have been in the company for 40 years or more. This is a company where people come and they work there all their lives. Their families work there all their lives. In my case, my mother retired from there. My stepfather still works there. My husband's been there 28 years. I mean, that's just the way this is. You don't see that very much anymore. So these are people who have never done anything any other way. So this is what we were up against when we're trying to bring in a new system, people that are pretty much set in their ways. So before we did this implementation, our situation was pretty much we had no visibility across the organization. So we had a lot of projects going on to support different pieces of the shipyard, but we were sharing resources, IT resources, across all those different projects, but we didn't have really good visibility to see what everybody was doing in relation to the big picture. And we had some tools, and I'll talk a little bit about that, but we had these multiple disconnected systems. So we had a we had a system that was, you could put your demand in it. It was basically a spreadsheet on steroids. You put your demand in it, you could fulfill your demand, but it wasn't connected to our project schedules. And you would make a nice pretty picture and all the numbers would match, and then we'd never update it. It didn't really mean anything. We have another system where you were to request work, customers could request work, and we could approve it, disapprove it, do estimates, but it wasn't connected to the project schedules, so you wouldn't see where the people were doing the work. We had another system that we sort of cobbled together. It was a web-based forms thing, and it tried to track milestones and status and resources, but again, it wasn't connected to the project schedules to show you where people were doing the work. So we had all these systems. We also had competing priorities. Of those 450 shipbuilders or IT people, there's about 52 managers, resource managers, 24 project managers, and the rest are individual contributors. And everybody had a different idea what the priorities were. Now, we did have a little segment of projects where we made an attempt and we'd ask some questions and we'd try to prioritize those, but it wasn't against everything else that we were doing. So, with everybody's own opinion on what was number one priority, what happened? I said, well, just do them all. Well, what happens when you just do them all? What happens in your organization? Nothing, right? Either you don't get it done, or it's whoever screams the loudest gets theirs done, right? So that's where we were. So we had to make a decision. A couple of years ago, we used to be part of a little company called Northrop Grumman, if any of you have heard of them. We spun off from Northrop Grumman, and we took some of the good things that we liked that we were doing, and we shed some of the things we didn't like, but we ended up kind of with this mishmash that I just talked about, these different systems, some homegrown, some COTS, and we needed to do something with that. So we did like every big company does. We hired somebody to come and tell us what to do. So we hired a consultant. They came in. They looked at all our processes. They mapped out our processes. And in the end, they said, well, what you guys need to resource your, to manage your resources is Project Server. So we had this decision. And so they came to me, and we said, well, we've never done this before. We've never implemented Project Server. We've done a lot of things, but not this. We don't have the expertise. As a project manager, they came to me because I'd used it before in another organization, and because I really liked the product, and I would tell anybody that would listen to me. So well, we're going to put you in charge of rolling this out. So I knew that I needed help because we didn't have the expertise within inside of IT to do this. So the first thing we had to do was find an integration partner. And then I talked just a little bit about how we went about that process so we could get the right fit there. So we had to start with your requirements, right? Well, before you even do your requirements, you got to have a catchy name for your project. Say, Dara's sitting over here. She came up with this. PALM, Portfolio and Labor Management, in the palm of your hand. So our product, our server, we call it PALM. Everybody refers to it that way. And we had our requirements. Now, these were a result of some of the work we did with the previous consultant and figuring and documenting our processes and all. But we need to address demand management. We needed to address project prioritization and planning, staffing, and delivery management. And we needed to optimize our resources across all of those so we could get all of that together. We knew that you can't just do one of these things. You have to do them all together so that you can actually get a holistic picture of your resources. So it's kind of a wordy slide, but I'm going to go into a little bit more refined detail here. So in the demand management block, priorities. You have to know what the priorities are, right? If you're going to manage your demand, where are you going to address your demand first? We needed to know skill sets. We needed to know those primary, the skills that people had that could fulfill the demand. We needed to know what type of skill was in demand. Our true demand versus inflated estimates. We also needed to understand, were our estimates inflated? Did we really need what we thought we needed? We needed to refine all of that. Under resource management, priorities. Resource managers need to know, what's the priority? What am I going to put my people on first? They needed a realistic view in real time of who, what, and when. Where do you need my people? When do you need them? What are they going to be doing so I can put the right person on there? And then again, skill sets for resource managers. I need to be able to plan as a resource manager who I'm going to hire next. What skill sets am I lacking? Where am I going to cross-train people so that they can fulfill this need? Project management. Priorities. You see the pattern here, right? So we needed to know as project managers what takes priority. When I'm in contention because we have scarce resources with the other project managers, we needed a tiebreaker. We needed to know who gets that resource, what's going on. And a view across all the projects so we could see the interdependencies across our projects and see, you know, where those resource contentions are before they became a problem so that we could actually have conversations between resource managers and project managers on what we were going to do about these situations and what wasn't going to get done. Because when you have all that work and you only have so many resources, something's not going to get done. At least this way we could understand what was not going to get done. And we wanted to share the pain, the wealth, whichever one you want to put it. We wanted other people to understand what we were doing as project managers, know that we had these contentions. Because it was all invisible before. You couldn't see into it. You couldn't see what was going on. So in picking a partner, what we did was we put out an RFQ. So the first thing I did was I went to the Microsoft Project Conference in Arizona the last time around, right? And I went around all the booths, like downstairs, and I talked to all the partners, kind of got a feel for who was who. And came back home, and we put together an RFQ. And basically, it was a matrix, an Excel spreadsheet. 62 requirements down one side, the top five Microsoft partners across the top. And we sent this spreadsheet out, of course, with each person individually, and had them fill it out. And we also gave them the opportunity to meet with us for an hour and sort of demo what they were going to do so we could get a feel for how we felt about them and that sort of thing. Those 62 requirements boil down into what you see here. So we needed to have somebody who had access to Microsoft, somebody who could get answers quick for us because we didn't want to be stuck on things. We wanted to be an established and stable company. Obviously, you don't want somebody going out of business in the middle of your project, right? We have strict security requirements. You saw we build nuclear carriers, submarines. We are super security conscious. We needed somebody who could get in and get somebody in our doors and be able to navigate that whole security without it being an impediment to our project. Cultural compatibility, all those old timers needed people that could deal with that. We wanted somebody to come in, get the work done, and get out the door, right? So we were very clear about that. We also needed a broad band of knowledge. We needed somebody who could help us with from the installing of the software to the documentation to rolling out and training the whole gamut because we didn't have any of that in-house at the time. And we needed to have that in-house when they left. So we needed them to help us get there. End-to-end integration, like I said, we wanted to go from the beginning to the end. No custom code. That was our mantra. We wanted out of the box. No custom code. We wanted no plugins. We don't want to buy anything. We want to just have Microsoft project, client, and server. That's it. And we actually broke that rule twice, and I'm going to talk about that. But we didn't buy anything, but we did write two pieces of custom code. I'll talk about those. And we wanted evidence of what was being delivered. And so the winner, oh, of course, because you know, because Rob's here, was Progility, yay. And I'm going to tell you guys what they won on was that evidence of what would be delivered. They said, we're going to give you a design document, and here's what it looks like. And it was an actual design document. We really liked that, so we could see what we were going to get for our money. So the solution. So we're going to tell you today about how we won the hearts and minds of 24 project managers, 52 resource managers, 374 individual contributors in 9 months. You were going to talk about the next part.
What's that?
You're talking about the next part.
Oh, yeah. So the key really with Jenny's team was they had very well-defined requirements. They weren't really down to project server does this and that. It's what their overall vision and goals and processes need to look like. And that, if you're looking to engage a partner, you're already engaging one, that really drives us more than anything else. Understanding the vision goals, we can build almost anything. We can configure almost anything. Understanding what the end state needs to look like is absolutely critical. The big key to what Jenny was looking for was self-sufficiency. So she wanted throughout the whole project to be knowledge transfer throughout the whole project for both the administrators, the end users, everybody in the organization. So the minute we got out the door, everybody knew what the tool did, they were schooled on it, but they could also support it internally. So that was a big part of it, both documentation as well as knowledge transfer training and handoffs. And coming up with an approach, and part of our approach actually has to do with driving measured adoption through different iterations and different phases. That was another part of our approach that really hopefully differentiated from the other guys. And speed to market, getting the application.
Right.
You don't want to wait 4 months and show it to them. They go, oh my God, that's not what I want. You want to show it to them in 60 days. Then play with it for 2-3 weeks, get their feedback, update the requirements, and continue to iterate on that. It's really a best practice for going about these kinds of deployments. It encouraged self-sufficiency, and it really got them down the road to better understand the application. So when we did leave, they knew what it was all about, they could manage it, maintain it.
So they came in, we installed the software, we did. We got everything up and running. I'm going to shout out to Dan because he's sitting in the audience right there. He sat with us and felt our pain for several months and guided us through doing it, all of it. And in the end, what we ended up was, again, out of the box. I'm not going to go through all that because you install it, you put it out of the box, right? But what we ended up with was clear priorities. So we used the strategic driver questions built into Project Server. Came up with these questions. We applied them to our projects. And we didn't get it right the first time. We were a little bit off, but we saw what the results were. We tweaked the questions. Management was happy. And we had this done at the highest management level. So they were the ones creating these driver questions based on business requirements. And we applied them to all projects, not just subsets. So now we have a list. We have that priority list, and you know what's number one, and you know what's number two, and all the way down to, I don't know how many we have, 1,000-something now, something. So we got that. A view across projects. Well, now you can look and you can report in a bazillion different ways. We can see across all our projects. We can see, I'll show you in some of our reporting in a minute, that we can do by the person, by the project, by the team, however we want to look at it, and we can see what people are doing across these projects. Skills analysis. Each resource in our company is assigned a primary demand role, and this equates to whatever their primary skill set is. So in the portfolio analysis section of Project Server, there is a place where you select the demand role, and it uses it in its analysis when it's trying to figure out what projects you are staffed to do and are not staffed to do. And so we made use of that in here for that. Now estimate import. This is one of those two places I told you we did custom code. So our estimates we do in Excel spreadsheets. Big fancy spreadsheet. Bottom line is it spits out this tab that has a time phased by demand role, hours for what you need to do a particular project. So Progility built us a little button right there in PWA. We can push it and it pulls that spreadsheet into the resource plan in project. So now we can see our planned work without having a project manager assigned building a schedule yet, because at this point, when it's just planned, there's nobody working it. But it's in the resource plan, so we can see that as unmet demand. It's approved work in the system waiting to be worked while we do the rest. So that is a piece of custom code that we had done. Yes. Well, in our the way that we were structured, we actually have a group that does these estimates, and this spreadsheet has a lot of logic built into it that we could have built into the resource plan, I'm assuming, you know, with a lot of programming, but we didn't want to go there because we had our eye on the next phase that we want to do, and I'm going to talk about that in our next step. So, but that was an existing thing, and we didn't want to rebuild that. So, yeah. Then we have this block point release. So, if you're not familiar with that term, that's basically in our company, anytime you're going to go to production, you have to be on this schedule with anything you do with a project. Usually it's with coded project, new code for applications we code or whatever, but it could be for anything. And I got very loud here, I think. Is that better? So very loud. We have the schedule, and there is a report that we have, an Excel report, and I'm going to talk about this. It's kind of important to us for our implementation. It was that in order to go to production with anything we do, you have to be on this report and you have to be marked off as ready for production, or you don't go, right? So it's something that we'd been using across the company. So what we did was we moved that report into project, so it's in Excel services, but it pulls from the project schedules. Well, now, in order to get on that report, your schedule, I feel like I'm echoing. Is this? Sorry. I can hear myself four times. To get on this report, you have to have your schedule in order. Your schedule has to have the right resources, the right times, and all. It has to be right. So it forced everybody to really participate because they couldn't get their stuff into production if they didn't. So for this, it was accidental. It wasn't on purpose. We were just trying to eliminate the system it used to come from. But in doing so, we ended up having this report that got people who probably would not have been on board or would have taken a lot longer to adopt the system very quickly. So, challenges. Okay, actual time. This was the other place we did a customization, and I will tell you up front, I'll give you the spoiler, 2 weeks after, I think it was maybe not even 2 weeks after we went live, we turned it off. We didn't do it. It was a big mistake. So what we wanted to do was bring in actuals that people worked into project, but we couldn't use the timekeeping system because we're obligated by the rules we're under to use the timekeeping system that we already have. And so we wanted to import that time into project. And our challenge was matching up the tasks that people worked with the actual time charges that they had because they weren't at the same level, right? So what we did was we put these fake tasks at the top of everybody's schedule where we could load time to. We had a job that ran on Tuesday nights, and it would pull all the time from our timekeeping system. It would match up the person and the charge number in our project. We had them loaded, and it would put that time into all the schedules. Well, what this did was, number one, it doubled all your previous time because now you had the fake task with their actual time, and you had your real tasks with their time, right? It confused people. People didn't know how to use it. It really didn't serve the purpose that we had intended. So just a couple of weeks in, said, nope, we got approval to take it out. We deleted it from all the projects, and we've never looked back since. Do not recommend doing that. We have a system we can look in for actual time. We just don't need that. We also needed, so the other challenge we had was, well, we had the multiple tools. So I've talked about the multiple tools we had, and we did eliminate some of those. So we eliminated the web-based form I said nobody really adopted. We eliminated the Excel spreadsheet on steroids where we had the demand and the fulfillment because we had server to do all that for us, right? We still have the request system. We still use HP Service Manager as our request system. This is where we approve or disapprove work. Only approved work gets into Palm, so to Project Server. So it's still a manual process today. We can put in requests for work, it gets estimated, goes through all the approvals, and when it gets approved, the person that approves it manually enters it into Project Server, and then we go on and we manage it from there. So that's going to be one of the things that we tackle in the future. Then we had tracking unmet demand. So we needed to track all the work that was approved, because all the approved work's in there, right? But wasn't ready for a person to be assigned to it. So what we did was we used generic demand resources. So I told you we had this demand management role, and every person in IT is assigned a demand management role, or you know whatever their role may be. And for each one of those, there's a resource, a generic resource that has the same name. So in my project, in the estimate, if I need a voice engineer, then I'm going to have a generic role that's voice engineer. It's going to get loaded in the resource plan. The resource manager is going to see, oh, look, we need 20 hours of a voice engineer in January. Joe's a voice engineer. I'm going to give them to you. They go. They assign them to the project. They tell the project manager he's assigned. Project manager goes in, swaps out the time from the generic resource to the real named resource, and now we don't have unmet demand anymore. So we use Excel services again for reports to see where all that unmet demand is. So we always have a picture of what's coming up, what we have to do, where it is. It also gave us a picture of where we don't actually have skill sets to do some of the work. I asked for a voice engineer, but guess what? There's not a resource in IT that has that skill. So then the resource managers have something to work with in advance of the need. Then adoption is a huge cultural change, as you can imagine, for people that hadn't been doing anything like this for a long time. So it took a lot of hand-holding. It took a lot of documentation. We have user guides for each type of role, who you are, resource manager, project manager, an individual contributor, team member. Right on the front of PWA, you go on there, you get it. For the first several months, I would send out every other day, here's your new tip of the day. Anything that people were asking me a lot about, I'd make it into a tip, I'd send it out in an email, and I would add it to a help file that kept growing. Right on the front of PWA, you could always go in there and find it. So we did a lot of that, and everybody has me and Dara and Doug on speed dial, so they call us when they need help. And then we also had involvement for all levels. Our middle management asked for it, but our CIO said, we're going to do this. This is not going away. This is happening, and we're going to use this. And then it was implemented really at the lowest levels. So everybody was involved in this. And then motivation, that BPR report, I'm telling you, if you give them something that they have to use to do their job, they're going to use it because they got to do it, right? So the deployment approach.
So how did we get there?
How did we get there?
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of work, a lot of good times?
Yeah.
So the approach we took when we partnered up with Jenny was really a three-phase approach. The first part was about going in and really understanding the dynamics of the organization, understanding the business processes that Jenny and her team wanted to address, breaking down the demand management, the resource management, thank you, and project management processes into sub-processes, listing out what the key steps were, who the responsible parties were, and how the application will be designed to actually reflect those processes. We find when we do that, and a lot of the processes we find scaffolding, getting them to actually use the system, gaining the feedback from that in some different sessions, updating the design, continuing to go through an iteration, getting that to a pilot phase. They living through the pilot for a period of time, I think it was 4 weeks. Living through the pilot, capturing all that feedback, listening to the end users, at the same time trying to educate people behind the system on what was done, how the system was configured, and as we update and maintain it, it's something they could own going forward. And finally, getting to the point where we had an operational pilot in place where you have users actually actively using the system. Now you have to focus more on adoption because you have the system configured and you've identified what processes are going to be put in place to reflect the business requirements. The goals and the real key here, we are encouraging client self-sufficiency throughout the whole process. So getting them involved in every step of the process, whether it was configuration of the tool, whether it was some of the testing, whether it was the pilot, we were always there with them side by side. And because of some of the strict security requirements, there was really no offsite work.
No.
Yeah. We had to be there face to face on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. And frankly, in the really good projects, that's how they go. You're learning the business. And the only way you can do that in a short period of time is to be face to face. So a lot of folks want to do remote projects, and that's fine to keep costs down. But if you're trying to address a really big business problem, face to face is the best way to go. It also helps reduce risk. We got the application out in front of people very early on in the life cycle. So within about 60, 65 days, they were seeing the tool, providing feedback, and we were iterating on top of that. And finally, we were driving adoption. Measured adoption. It was groups being brought into the tool, focusing on the PMs and other users in the community. So that was the deployment approach we took. The schedule, or schedule, as some people say. It was a pretty aggressive schedule, so it was basically a 9-month project. So we went through the process, we did obviously project planning and management throughout, and we lined up the different phases, really in the iterative. We're doing our process analysis and requirements. You see, that happened pretty quickly. Within the first 2 months, we had all that stuff. Went in and we started the system installation, configuration, both the prototype, the POC, as well as the pilot, and working through those iterations over about a 4-month period. And finally, updating that with the operational pilot right after that, you can see there's overlap between one phase and another. Because it's really an iteration of a previous phase, it doesn't pure waterfall, it actually overlaps that. So we had engagement, we had testing, we had training going on, knowledge transfer throughout the whole process. And finally, project closeout, they said, thanks, they called.
We canceled their accounts and they were gone. No, I'm just kidding. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, that was me.
They're the gatekeepers to the data, and if you don't have them using it in a consistent, measured way, the system's going to fall apart. Focusing on the PM, really getting them to use and adopt it in a consistent way, and getting their feedback and iterating on that is absolutely critical. So things like round bag sessions can help. Doing a lot of end-user mentoring and coaching, where you're not in a classroom, you're sitting one by one, helping someone through the life cycle of building and managing a project schedule, building off of a template, updating a template, understanding how do you align resources. All these things are really important parts of the process that the tool will reflect, but people have to follow that process and procedure. Administration mentoring as well, for the folks at the back end that are going to be managing the application, both on the IT side, but mainly really on the functional PMO side. So you can update fields, create views, listen to the users, and teach them how to listen to the users and reflect that in an updated configuration. We left behind a lot of documentation, not just about the process, but also about the configuration, down to a field level. Everything that was modified in the system, from a change control perspective, if you want to go and change it, you better update the documentation, and then you can update the application. Otherwise, things can get out of whack real quick. And if you start going through a deployment where you have multiple instances, prod, dev, and test, they can get out of whack really, really quickly. So documentation and having a real process is really critical to managing and maintaining this from an administration perspective.
Yep.
I don't know if you have anything to add.
We actually kind of messed up a little bit in the middle there ourselves and had to go and do a side-by-side comparison where we had dev or test and prod up next to each other and make sure they were configured the same. So.
Oh, an exercise.
Yeah. All right, reporting. Uh-oh. Oh, now you did it again. See, every time you walk by this thing. Well, I'll start talking about reporting while he fixes it. I don't know. You get a lot of you have project installed. Who uses Excel Services? A couple of people. Who uses SSRS? Is that the right acronym? Yeah, okay. So you guys have done some reporting here. We're here. Wonder if I can advance that way. Okay, we're getting better. So I have one slide on reporting, but I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to spend a little bit of time here because it's really important for us. Well, oh my God.
So, 10 seconds.
So we have what we did was we started out with this grand idea that we were going to have this report that would create these really complex PowerPoint slides that we do as project managers to present our projects. And we had Pragility build those, and then we never used them because people looked at them and got a little scared. And that was in SRS. But what we also did was they started us off in Excel Services, and that's where we had the big win. So everything that we do now is in Excel Services. And what they did that helped us so much was Dan sat down with Doug, who's sitting here, and made him an expert in doing this. And he can come up with reports. So after this, if you got questions about reports, he's the guy to talk to. But what we did was we took the priorities that were coming out of the portfolio side, and so we can get that data, and we have everything ranked, you know, from one to whatever. And then we combine that with the information on the project side so that we could create things like this first report up here. This is sort of a holistic view of everything. So I've just shown you a little tiny piece of it, and it's kind of scrubbed. But what it shows you is it has the number that's our request number. So this tracks it back to our request system where it was approved, so you can always find it. It also ties it to where we store our documentation, because we're not storing our documentation in project sites yet, but I'll get to that. It shows you the priority, shows you the name of the project, and then we have the hours by month. And you can see the named resources on the project, and you can also see the unmet demand. So I can take this report, because it's in a pivot table, and I can slice and dice it any way I want, and I can see all the unmet demand across a project, across a set of projects, across the types of projects, across the entire organization. I can just do it for Joe Smith and just see everything that Joe Smith is assigned to and what hours he has across that and where he's over-allocated. Then the other thing we have is another report that just shows us how people are allocated in percentiles. So resource number 3 here is over-allocated in March and April. And we use the colors, the reds and the yellows, and this is a report. Under-allocated for resources 4 and 5, and those would have names in them. I took our names out, but we go over these things once a month so that we can sit down with our resource managers and our project managers and kind of look at, okay, is resource 3 really over-allocated, or did somebody mess their schedule up? Do we need to go fix it? Or when there was a bargain between the resource manager and the project manager, was, you know, did somebody not do what they're supposed to do in their schedule? So let me explain that a little bit, because we do track 100% of a resource. We track, we account for it. So resource managers actually have their own project schedule. We call it their resource schedule. And in there, they have all the people that report to them, and they put in there their vacation time. They put in time for training. They put in what we call reoccurring work, which is just operations work that they do. So the stuff that's not project-oriented, they manage all that right there, so they know how much time they have of the person, and they know how much they can give to projects. And when the project time, the resource manager assigns the person to the project when they agree that they can work on it, and then the project manager puts the agreed amount of time in their schedule, so that then in these reports you can see it all together, and you can see where the person's working. Lets the project manager do their job and manage the project, but it still gives the resource manager the control to see where everything is and account for the whole person. And then this last one on here is the BPR report that I was talking about. So it's basically the report that we had. We had to add some custom fields, and people had to be able to fill them out inside their project, but it's the report that we use to get a production, so it's what made us successful there. But I'll say that all this sort of came, except for the BPR report, which we did pretty early on, all that really came after we went live. We wanted to understand the tool and understand what it did for us and have our resource managers in there really using it before they could really tell us how they wanted to get information out. Because as you probably know, there's all kinds of really cool reports. You can get right on the screen, right out of the box. You can see resource availability. But it turned out that our IT people, even though that was kind of cool, they really don't go there like we thought they would and like we trained them to. They want to see this Excel spreadsheet because they got the pivot tables and they want to, you know, make it their own way. And, oh, they can take that spreadsheet and configure it just to filter it on their people or whatever they want or the view they personally want, save it off to their desktop, and then just refresh the data anytime and they get real-time data from the system. So they can do their own thing with it, and we got lots of people doing that. So lessons learned. Well, include something that everyone relies on, so that BPR report, that was it for us. Don't force the system to do unnatural acts. That actuals feed, definitely an unnatural act. Training, when we shown that big spotlight on those projects, we found out that we had a lot of project managers that really didn't know how to use project the way they said on their resume. So we got training from Agility. We also sent a bunch of project managers off to a project boot camp just for just generic training so that they could know how to use project, the client, in the best way so that they could give us the best data in the system. User communications, so we had to repeat this, and we repeat this every day in every meeting. The tool does not replace talking to each other. People have to talk. Resource managers and project managers have to talk and negotiate those resources. That tool is not going to do that for you. Resource management, don't go overboard on the generic resources. We got one department that's got, like, I don't know, they got, what, 20 people or something, and they probably have 140 skill sets. What do you do with that? We can't, so that's something that we're trying to work through now. But we had to show it to them in the system and see the effects of that, and they're seeing that now, so I don't know what we're going to do about it, but. And non-project time, we knew that we really needed to see the whole person. There was a lot of debate up front about should we just put 80% of people's time in there and then just not even account for their, because we know they're going to do other stuff. And we really had to account for the whole thing so you get the whole picture of the person. Reporting, is this me or you? I don't know.
Might be me.
I think it might be you.
I can talk.
Okay, yeah, it's you.
And I would also reinforce what Jenny said about the project managers and maturity. You go to a lot of organizations, they say, yeah, we're a level 4 out of 5, right? Sit them down, here's a challenge, sit them down with the project schedule halfway process and ask them 5 questions about that schedule.
Yeah.
If they can't answer 4 of those 5, they're not going. Most project managers are good at managing day-to-day, but from a planning perspective and the details, they don't know how to build and manage schedules, which is really a key part of the PPM system. So spend some time really on the project manager skills. EPM records data around demand management. We still need to communicate. But the key is, until the tool is in full use, you can't assume people are going to be following your new process. They need time to actually adopt that process and then start doing it in a new way. So there's going to be a period where they're going to be doing things the old way in a new tool, and then you're going to transition that over when you start to see the kind of behaviors you're looking for. So don't assume go live means everybody switches over from a process perspective. It's a gradual adoption process. And remember, as Jay said, doesn't make decisions for you. It helps alert you when things are going on. It won't prevent you from over-allocating a resource. It will alert you that a resource is over-allocated. And you can certainly set up a notification that when somebody turns red, but if the project manager is engaged and they're paying attention to the schedule and the resources, they should know when a resource is over-allocated. They should know if schedule is going past the due date or going over budget. If they're using the PPM system proactively on a day-to-day basis, they'll know that stuff. Jenny talked about generic roles. Think about the limits of that. If you have 400 resources and 400 roles, probably like a ratio. Think about kind of summing that up into maybe a quarter to an eighth of the total resources you have.
Sorry.
You want to manage actively also those generic resources, because roles in the organization and individuals are going to change. And you have the AD feed to keep resources up to date, but that resource pool from a metadata perspective really needs to be kept up to date by your team. Finally, around reporting, as Jay mentioned, give people what they use today. You can come up with all kinds of revolutionary dashboards and reports, and PPM sex usually sells. The big sexy dashboards are what people want, but what they need is day-to-day information. It's the spreadsheet sitting on the desktop they can refresh to make a business decision. So use the tools that are built in, automate manual processes. That's really what Project Server is very, very good at. If you design it from the beginning to do that, you can be very successful. Jenny talked about systems integration, how it didn't really add any value.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you know the requirements for your systems integration and why you're doing it. You'll end up spending some time and money if you don't need to. We have lots of clients that do it and they're very successful, other ones, but just in the end of the day, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Okay.
So finally, around portfolio analysis, remember, you don't need an entire foundation in place to start doing portfolio analysis. You can wade into doing the portfolio analysis part of the application. You want to have consensus on your business drivers, as Jenny talked about, they got at the beginning, the importance of those, the alignment of all of your projects, but you really have to have a view of what the entire landscape looks like today. What does your active project load look like? What projects are in progress? What are your resources doing? You can layer portfolio manager on top of that. If you try to just do top-down, you're losing a lot of the value that a system or project server can provide. So think about it as a top-down and bottom-up in layers. You have to have the foundation in order to get to the PPM.
Okay. So we have some next steps. So where we're going next, we're going to implement project workspaces. So we didn't do that in the beginning because we were in the middle of rolling out SharePoint 2013 at the same time we were implementing Project Server 2010 and SharePoint. So we're kind of a little mismatched. Our SharePoint team made a switch on us at the last second, and we decided not to go along with them. So we didn't roll out the workspaces, although they're available. So we've got some people that have already adopted them. And we're getting to the point where we're going to start moving over to using some of that. Integration with TFS, we use TFS, Team Foundation Server. We know that there's a really cool interface between the two. So that's on our plate to do next. Integration with HPSM, that, if you recall, is our request system. So where you can request work and it gets approved. Our plan is to build an automation so that when somebody clicks approve in that, it automatically gets loaded into Project Server and we don't have to do that manually. And then custom estimating tool integration. So you asked about the Excel spreadsheet and why we kept that. So because the plan is that we actually want to build all that logic that we have into our own sort of web front end, SQL back end estimating tool. It does have a lot of complex logic inside of it. So the plan is to build something like that that does have the SQL backend, and then again automate it so that the data can flow directly into project and we don't have the human in the middle of it. So, and then upgrade next year, we're upgrading to something. I don't know what it's going to be, but we have to move forward, so we'll see. Yeah, 13 it might be. I don't know. So, questions?
Yes? When you were implementing, you did a pilot, and you had, were you or your project managers entering data into the systems, or did they do that?
We picked a few projects, and it kind of, the pilot bled a lot into everything else, so it kind of grew, but being 450 people, we could have piloted with the whole organization, I guess, but we did pick a few. We tried, because our projects go across so many resource managers, though, we ended up sort of affecting just about every piece of the organization, if not everybody, but every area when we did the pilot. Did we have our own dedicated people? We don't have dedicated people in anything. So we share. No matter what we're doing, we share. So we had, you know, a little piece of an application administrator's time and a piece of my time, because at the same time we're doing this, I'm upgrading 20,000 people to Windows 7. So that was my other project at the time. So it was a bunch of little pieces of people's time in order to do it. And then, of course, we had Dan dedicated to us. So he was... let me go on the side, and then I'll come back. Go ahead.
When you do your AD sync to keep your resources updated, mm-hmm.
Right. So we have, Doug here is our resource manager, and what he does is, as the people come in, he moves them into, we use the RBS structure, and so he moves them into the correct position in the RBS, and then the resource managers update the,
We ask them to do that periodically.
Okay. Okay, so the resource manager themselves will update what the skill set is. And if a person changes jobs, the resource managers are responsible for updating that. And we also have just a data point in there. We have their demand management role, but we also allow them to enter secondary skill sets. We're not per se using that in the analysis, but it's available so that people can look at it and they can say, oh, this is his primary role, but he's got these secondary roles too, and he might be able to fulfill something else. So so you had a question?
Yeah, when you guys are planning on the TFS integration, how mm-hmm. do you see that impacting the research management picture overall? Because I know people track their time and whatnot
for TFS. Right. Yeah, so we haven't done it yet, so I could be making stuff up, but the way I understand it is that the TFS would be much more detailed information, and they would do their work there, and the information that they track and maintain in TFS gets pulled into project and into your schedule. And I think somebody did a demo. Apparently the tasks come in at the top, and you can move them as a project manager to where you want them. And so there's a back and forth with the two systems. But I haven't done it yet, so. And, yes?
I believe that the project plans that you have for the shipbuilding and the government, do you guys have broken down the projects in smaller pieces, or do you use just one project plan for one shipbuilding?
Oh, well, okay, so first of all, let me be clear. We don't build ships using this. This is not for building ships. This is for IT projects. We use it for, the Windows 7 rollout is a project, or if we're implementing a piece of software to do something. We manage all of our IT in-house because of our security requirements, so anything we do, we have to do ourselves. So all those projects, so to upgrade, we're an SAP shop, so anytime we do anything with SAP, there's a project for that, and that would be in there. Ships, whole different system, not project. Yeah.
It's about actuals. I'm curious. I understand everything about
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the question was about what are we doing about actuals, because that shows you your true resource utilization. And we have another system where we can get that information from. And our project managers can get reports from that. And we actually... we take status reports from our users through Project Server, but then we use that also as a to compare, and we will update our schedules based on the actuals that are real. And yeah, it's manual. And to be honest, without being able to use timesheet, I don't know what else you do, because people aren't going to enter their time in another system in the detail you need it to be able to draw it in. So, yeah.
Yes. Are you using resource plans?
Resource plans? Yes. That's where we put our estimates. So that Excel spreadsheet that we draw in, it comes into the resource plan. So we use the resource plan for the estimate. We call that our feasibility estimate. And then once the project manager takes the project on and creates a project plan schedule, then we flip the switch, because you can calculate from project plan, and then it'll go from the schedule. Yeah. So I don't know, how are we on time?
We've got 17 minutes. We're good.
Oh, okay.
Question: you mentioned project test. Mm-hmm. Did you stand up by full time, or did you?
No, we actually didn't do a dev. So we did a test and a prod, and that's it. We got test and prod, too. We did our pilot in the test system. Yeah. So, I'll answer some more questions, but I want to leave you guys with a thought. So I told you we're an old company. This picture was taken in 1895. This right here is a crane we have in our machine shop, and last year we replaced it. So we're a little slow to change. I saw a letter written in 1920 from a material supply that said, "We're sorry, sir, but we don't provide parts for antiquated equipment anymore." That was 1920. We just replaced it last year. So. So, do we have any other questions? Okay, yes, ma'am, in the back. Material resources, we do not track them in project. We don't track there. Some project managers will put duration in, and some actually, I take that back. We do, some will use generic resources to track the time, especially if they have to really account for those material resources, but we don't enter them as enterprise resources. Yes?
What was the total time for this, from the time you started developing the requirements to when went into production? How many FTEs of your time were put into this project?
It was 9 months. That's what we, Oh no! Well, we probably spent a month on developing the RFQ. Maybe not even that much time. We did have, now to be fair, we had the work of this consultant who had come in, and they left us with a lot of stuff. So we were able to reuse things from them. And then I know Dara put in probably, I don't know how much time did you put in into processes. It was a lot of time. She put in a lot of time into just flow charting our processes. That was kind of invisible to me. It was all magical. She did it. And then my time, I was 25% of my time for that period was on the project, at least on paper. So I still work the project, and it's been over for a while. So. Yes, ma'am.
One of the snapshots you were showing
Okay, so the unmet demand in the report we had, that was based on the generic resource. So when we do an estimate, the estimate has that generic resource and how much time we need of that generic resource over months. And so we load that into the resource plan, and then in the report it shows up as that generic resource. Now that it'll be aggregated, so if three projects ask for a voice engineer, the report's going to show all the time from those three projects that we need a voice engineer for that. And then we can also use those generic resources in our project schedules. So say I have a project and I've got agreement from resource managers for all the staff, but I also need a DBA and I haven't got that agreement yet. I might have a generic DBA in there with some time, and it'll show up on the reports as unmet demand because it's a generic resource. So we have them all the generic resources are flagged as unmet demand.
Okay, so you're also forecasting by name
the resource as well. You can tell that resource is committed. If the resource is committed, yes. Yes. Correct. Correct. Yeah. If a resource is committed to it, and if their name is on it, we expect that resource to be doing that work, and so it's fulfilled.
So probably earlier on, you don't really have committed resource, and then you assign a generic resource for $200, for example, on this.
Right.
And then later on, you know that I have one named resource, I can probably assign him $200.
Yes, so what we would do is we would make a determination at that time, can that one resource get all the work done in 100 hours, and can I just wipe out my demand and use that one resource, or do I put that resource in for 100 hours and I still have another 100 hours of unmet demand?
So when you set up the generic resources,
then do you actually also set up the maximum unit in the resource
information?
For the generic resources...
Yeah.
You got to talk really loud, Dan.
Sorry. So your max units describes your capacity for work.
Right.
So you don't want generic resources to have any capacity because no one there can actually do the work. So what we saw there was 0% max units reflecting that if these resources are assigned to tasks, there's actually zero work that they can physically do.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Anyone else?
What granularity are your resource planning work days, weeks,
We try to do everything at a month level. So when we add, when we enter time against anything, we try to keep our views at a month level because that's what we report at and that's what we do our comparisons on. Now, there are some projects where we might get a little more granular just because we're on a specific time crunch to meet, you know, milestones in a very short time frame, but we'd still report on that at the month level. Well, right now it's just a conversation. But what we are doing is we're utilizing the project. We're going to utilize the project workspaces. We have built in into our template a discussion log, and a communication log we call it. And we already have the templates and all to do this, but basically it would be where we log the conversation of I need so-and-so or I need this and okay, you can have this, I agree to this, so that the whole interaction is logged. We were going to implement that and we ran into a permissions issue that stumped Microsoft, and so they've given us a resolution, but we haven't tested it yet, so we're still working through that. But ultimately, we want to capture all that in a log. Right now, it's email, just back and forth. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, guys. Thanks.